Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's good to join you again. I was off last Friday. I took a trip down to Houston, Texas, to address a bunch of Texans who are very much concerned about the immigration issue, but it's great to be back in New York City. Great to be back home doing my show once again. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know already that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I spent 30 years with that agency, did everything from being an inspector at Kennedy Airport to spend a year as an adjudications officer doing those marriage interviews that you see in the movies to figure out if a couple was actually living together so that an alien could acquire citizenship through their marriage to a United States citizen or a lawful immigrant. And then I spent 26 years as an immigration special agent, rotated through all the squads within the investigations branch, served a four-year stint with the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA, and became a senior special agent assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. If you want to read more about my background and the reason that I'm so passionate about the immigration issue, I would urge that you go to three websites. First of all, michaelcutler.net, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also have another website called talkborder.com. That's one word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R, talkborder.com. And finally, for a number of years, I've been very happy to be a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Terrific bunch of folks, great organization. They are located in, as they would probably like to say, beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, right off the Pacific Ocean. Can't imagine a more delightful place to visit. Been there a number of times. Always a joy to be out there. And here I am on the East Coast, nearly 3,000 miles away, doing what I do here. But their terrific website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. This week has been a very interesting week in so many ways, perhaps a bit too interesting. There's that infamous Chinese curse that says, be careful what you wish for, you may get it. And indeed, here we are getting it. Or actually, their curses may live in interesting times, I guess. And there's another one that says, be careful what you wish for. But the Chinese curse is, may you live in interesting times. And indeed, these are more than interesting times. And the timing, of course, is everything. This past Wednesday, that was the 12th of September, I traveled down to Washington, D.C., Fair and Congressman Lou Barletta of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, sponsored a briefing for the Freshman Immigration Reform Caucus in the House of Representatives. I accompanied a gentleman by the name of Stephen Henry, a deputy sheriff, or a sheriff actually, from Pinal County. As he pointed out, that county is about as large as the entire state of Connecticut. When you get down to Texas and Arizona and that part of the country, everything isn't big. It's supersized. And we'll talk about supersized maybe a little bit later and how it applies to the beverages we can no longer drink in New York City. But they've got their hands full in Arizona. But let me tell you, we've got our hands full across the entire country. When we hear this nonsense about immigration being a problem for the four border states, I always like to make the point that, in point of fact, we have 50 border states. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport or lies along the Canadian as well as the Mexican border must of necessity be considered a border state. So the two of us were invited to address members of the caucus, and Congressman Barletta, as you would expect, was there. Great to see him. Always is a privilege. I consider him a great American as well as a great leader. And there were many members who sent their staffers, and it was great to meet with them. So it's always good when there's a good audience in attendance so you can provide perspectives that, quite frankly, the news very often does not provide. And the sheriff's story about the violence, the long lines of illegal aliens coming across the border, including so-called OTMs other than Mexican, very disturbing. But this is not new. It's absolutely not new. And the irony to it all, of course, was that as I was preparing to head down to Washington, the news broke that our embassy in Libya had been assaulted, that our ambassador had been slaughtered, that three other workers of the State Department had been killed, two former Navy SEALs and another State Department employee. The Navy SEALs, from what I gather, were on assignment, probably acting as RSOs, resident security officers for the State Department, where they would coordinate their efforts with the U.S. Marine Detachment, the contingent, whose mission it is to protect all of our embassies and consulates around the world. And, you know, again, initially there was a lot of chaos. Nobody seemed to have a handle on it. But with the passage of time, what seems to be emerging is the almost consensus that because of how coordinated the attack was, that likely Al-Qaeda was behind it. And also, again, remember, it was on the anniversary of 9/11 for the Arab world. Symbolism is very important. Anniversaries are very important. And, of course, this past Tuesday, we marked the 11th anniversary of the terrorist attacks of 9/11. And there's a couple of takeaways that I'd like for you to all understand. This was a point I had raised with some of the folks that I spoke with in Washington. We need to understand what has happened in the past to understand what is likely to happen in the future. I was an immigration officer, an immigration agent, when the embassy in Tehran was overrun back in 1978 or 79. And at that time, 53 Americans were taken hostage. It was during the Jimmy Carter administration. And it wasn't until President Reagan was sworn in that those hostages were released. And as I recall, in fact, ABC News started up a program that has endured called Nightline. And initially, Nightline was a special report that followed the evening news, for those of you old enough to remember this, that reported on the details of the ongoing hostage situation in Iran. And we were asked here in the United States, we the immigration agents, to go out and try to locate all of the Iranian students and visitors in the United States, because there were real concerns that among them might be terrorists or saboteurs or people who would create a problem for us. And with our lack of resources, lack of manpower, lack of information and databases, it was absolutely a disaster. I don't think we would do much better today, quite frankly. And in fact, you know, what's remarkable is that increasingly the immigration issue has been removed from the equation. Let me give you an example. And this was an example that came to light when the sheriff spoke in Washington. He talked about how there were ICE and HSI agents assigned to work with his deputies. Now, if those of you aren't familiar with the alphabet soup of Washington, ICE, of course, is Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They picked up the mission that I was responsible for doing as an agent with the old INS, and now they have divided ICE off into yet another splinter agency known as HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. What word is missing from that three-word title? The word immigration. Jimmy Carter was good at eradicating the word alien, or at least he tried to be good at eliminating alien from the vernacular. You know, God forbid you should call somebody an alien. They've tried to make it into the N-word. Nothing could be further from the truth. The law simply defines an alien as being any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. There's no insult. There's nothing negative about that. It's a statement of fact. When we as Americans travel to other countries, we become aliens by virtue of setting foot on foreign soil. And I assure you, I don't know of any other country on this planet that would have a problem telling you that you're an alien. I had an interesting encounter many, many years ago when I was on my honeymoon with my first wife, may she rest in peace, and I tried to help the police. I wasn't even thinking. It was a conditioned response. And I was admonished afterwards. They were very nice about it, but they said, gee whiz, Mr. Cutler, you're not supposed to get involved here. You are in Amsterdam, and in the Netherlands, you're an alien. You can't make a citizen's arrest. Well, that's right. And I wasn't insulted that they called me an alien. They were telling the truth. In Amsterdam, in Holland, Americans are aliens. Go to any other country, we become aliens. But again, this is a matter of playing the name game, because this is absolutely Orwellian. It's not about being politically correct to not insult or offend anybody. If that's the goal, I'm right there with them. I agree with it. But if the reason for changing nomenclature, terminology, is to obfuscate the truth, then we enter the realm of propaganda. And that's dangerous. because if there's one thing that a democracy must have, it's truthful language in the debate. And that has gone the way of the dodo bird all too often these days. So the word alien is a terrible word. Now we have a division of DHS that is supposed to enforce immigration law, but they're not called immigration, they're called Homeland Security Investigations. And I want you to realize how crazy this is. The New York City Police Department has detectives that are assigned to a wide variety of squads: homicide, lofts and safes, intelligence, a whole spectrum of squads. They all carry the same badge, and they are all simply referred to as members of the New York City Police Department. The FBI, similarly, has multiple missions. They have agents who are assigned to work criminal cases. Their squads begin with the letter C, and those C squads, criminal squads, go after the drugs and corruption and all kinds of criminal investigations. And then they have the I squads, intelligence squads. Those guys are the spy hunters. They look for people who are coming here, possibly as a detachment to a foreign embassy or consulate or mission to the UN, and they make certain that they're not spying on us. But the FBI does not give them different credentials or a different title or tell them they're working for a different agency. They simply are FBI agents assigned to intelligence, FBI agents assigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and so forth. But this administration is so determined to remove the word alien and the word immigration from the government lexicon that they have spent tons of money issuing new badges, new credentials, new raid jackets, I'm going to imagine new stationery, new signage on offices to eliminate immigration and customs enforcement, because, gosh, God forbid we might scare off some illegal aliens, and they now call themselves HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. And let's consider why we have immigration laws. And I know I've made these points so many times in the past, but this evening, just a couple of days after our embassy in Libya was overrun and our ambassador slaughtered, and more embassies in the Middle East are being attacked, and not just ours, Germany's was also attacked earlier today, immigration laws have never been more important. Our borders have never been more important. Immigration laws exist for two primary purposes: to protect American lives and to protect the jobs of Americans. And what's incredible is that there are politicians who can win re-election opposing the enforcement of those two laws. And before you think that Mike Cutler just hates immigrants, I need to make a couple of points. My mother, may she rest her peace, died when I was in college a long time ago. She legally immigrated to the United States from her native Poland a few years before the Holocaust got going. I was, in fact, named for her mother, my grandmother, who was killed in Poland by the Nazis because she was a Jew. So immigration plays a prominent role in my personal story. My dad's parents came to America at the turn of the last century from their native Russia, Romania. They were unhappy with the Tsar. They were unhappy with a bunch of stuff. They legally immigrated to the United States. Every year, the United States admits more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants. And I don't have a problem with that, provided that there's integrity to the system, and there's not. And we'll get into a little bit of that in a little while. But understand that there is no integrity to a system that admits well over a million immigrants every year. The immigration laws that the immigration anarchists hate so much, they scream, "Oh my God, the laws are terrible." Well, those laws permit for the admission of those million-plus immigrants every year. Those very same laws permit something on the order of 150 million non-immigrant visitors to enter the United States every year. Those very same laws permit aliens to acquire political asylum, acquire residency based on marriage to a U.S. citizen. So those laws are not one-sided. It's not simply a set of laws that look to keep people from coming in and look to remove people. And those laws have nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. I could never have enforced laws that would have discriminated against anybody. And in fact, if you want to know the grounds for excluding an alien, and this is really important, because when aliens run the border, you have to make the presumption that they could not have legally entered the United States because they lack the requirement, or there's something in their background that keeps them out. So if you have a pencil handy, jot this down. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. And I've written about it for CAPS. You can find those articles at capsweb.org or michaelcutler.net. I've spoken about it on my other website, talkborder.com. 1182 starts out with talking about aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases or have mental illness and are violent or sex offenders, convicted felons, terrorist spies, and so forth, and also includes aliens who would take jobs they're not entitled to take or become public charges, go on welfare, that kind of thing. These are common sense laws, and they parallel the laws that many other countries have, except we don't enforce those laws, but I can most assuredly tell you that almost every other country on the planet does. Greece, in fact, in the wake of its economic crisis and its high unemployment rates, have cracked down on immigration law violations because they understand the harm it's doing to the economy. But we've talked about that before. Today, what I want to remain focused on is what's happening in the Middle East. I want you to know that in 1979, when we were tasked with going out to find these people, these Iranians who we believed had embedded themselves in communities, we had a hell of a time finding them. Very, very difficult. So many escaped detection. And then in 1993, America was attacked, not once, but twice, by individuals from the Middle East who had gamed the visa process and the immigration benefits program. First attack came January 93, a guy by the name of Amir Kansi, a Pakistani national who had been granted political asylum, even though he lied on his application, repaid America's kindness and generosity by standing outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47 and opened fire on the cars being driven into the compound, CIA employees and officers. He killed two CIA officers, wounded three others, fled the country. Now understand that there is a trapdoor that is available to transnational criminals and international terrorists that are not available to American citizens. The ability to flee America and head back to their home countries, where very often they are beyond the reach of the law because there's no extradition agreement. In the case of Kansi, however, because of the nature of the crime, our folks tracked him down and brought him back, put him on trial. He was found guilty and executed. It didn't change the fate of those who he shot. Just 1 month later, February 26, 1993, World Trade Center attacked by a bunch of Middle Eastern men who had gamed the visa process. And in fact, to give you a good example of the kind of stuff we're talking about, consider an individual by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima. He entered the United States, claimed to have been an agricultural worker when the Amnesty of 86 got revved up, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, or IRCA, as it's referred to by its initials, said that he was an agricultural worker, and God knows we don't have enough agricultural workers. He got amnesty, and as it turned out, the only thing that this thug ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center that ultimately killed six people, injured roughly 1,000, created $500 million in damages, almost brought down one of the towers sideways, and boy, oh boy, if that had happened, we likely would have had well over 100,000 fatalities. Lower Manhattan might still be underwater, including Wall Street and the entire financial district. It probably would have taken out the tunnels that connect Manhattan with New Jersey, Brooklyn with Manhattan, and the Clinton administration ignored the fact that immigration was at the root cause. Congress, however, did hold a hearing May of 1997, 4 years later. I was called to testify at that hearing. And one of the issues I raised was the need to use biometrics, and within a year, we wound up with electronic fingerprinting, at least the most rudimentary beginning forms of it, and of course it has since progressed steadily and the technology has gotten quite good. But understand that immigration was what enabled that to happen. Failures to secure our borders, failures to enforce immigration laws, enabled aliens to come into our country and game the system. Now, what does this have to do with the Middle East violence? I will tell you. Prior to those two attacks in 1993, the USS Cole, a naval vessel, was attacked by radical Islamists. Two American embassies were blown up. The lesson was clear. The terrorists operating overseas then come to the United States and do damage here. It is believed Al-Qaeda was behind the attack. If in fact, this most recent attack, and if in fact these are Al-Qaeda-inspired, directed, orchestrated attacks, my concern is that we could witness another attempt to stage an attack inside America. And before you go off and say, well, there's Mike Cutler, he's just a crazy guy who's paranoid, and by the way, you should know that there's a wonderful expression in law enforcement. Cops and agents always like to say that just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean you're not being followed. But I want you to listen to this. I'm going to read part of a news release that went out earlier today, and this was CNN, Cable News Network. Here's the title. U.S. warns of rising threat of violence amid outrage over anti-Islam video. And here's how it begins. After days of protests and related violence, concerns are growing that furor over an anti-Islam video could intensify even more on Friday, threatening U.S. interests abroad and at home. People have taken to the streets in 10 nations and the Indian-controlled region of Kashmir, according to U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, railing against innocence of Muslims and the nation where it was produced, the United States. This outrage and danger to Americans could worsen in the coming days, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the FBI warned Thursday in a joint intelligence bulletin. Continuing, the risk of violence could increase both at home, that means here inside the United States, folks, and abroad as the film continues to gain attention, the U.S. agency said. Additionally, we judge that violent extremist groups in the United States could exploit anger over the film to advance their recruitment efforts. And it goes on, but I think you get the point. Go back again to why we have immigration laws. We have immigration laws to protect American lives and American jobs, to keep the terrorists out of our country. We continue to expand the visa waiver program, which removes a very important layer of security, even as our expectations of privacy are whittled away in the name of national security. And there are so many examples, galactic incompetence by immigration, even with everything that's going on. Here's my most recent article that I wrote for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPSweb.org is the website. And the title of my article, Problems Still Abound in the Student Visa Program. Now, you know, when you talk about foreign students coming to the United States, most people immediately presume we are talking about brilliant people with IQs close to 200 who are going to Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Dartmouth, Columbia, and perhaps Stanford, and the list would go on in that direction. And indeed, there are some students like that, and that's fine. But let me tell you what. There are more schools in the United States that are authorized to provide opportunities for foreign students to get visas than you could ever imagine. My question to you is how many students, or how many schools, rather, do you think are authorized to issue the paperwork, a form known as the I-20, which when the foreign student has that form in his or her hand, can then go to a U.S. consulate or a U.S. embassy and apply for a visa? 500 schools? 1,000 schools? How many do you think? Sit down, fasten your seatbelt, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that according to the General Accountability Office, there are 10,000 schools in the United States that have the authority to issue that Form I-20. How many foreign students do you think are currently enrolled in the United States? 850,000. Now, I want you to just stop for a moment and let this sink in. And by the way, if you want to call in and join the conversation, the phone number is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. For those of you joining a little bit late, my name is Mike Cutler. This is the Michael Cutler Hour. And I'm trying to provide information about how what's going on in the Middle East poses a threat to our well-being here, further exacerbated by the failures of our government to secure our nation's borders against unlawful entry, enforce the immigration laws, and truly administer the immigration laws in a way that lives up to the obligation of protecting American lives and American jobs. Now, going back to what I was saying, the only reason that somebody might be interested in learning how to be a hairdresser, spend thousands of dollars, and fly thousands of miles from a foreign country to come to the United States is most likely because they really don't care about learning how to be a hairdresser or do woodworking, but they are interested in coming to the United States. So by getting that student visa, they're here. And once they are here, as the president has pointed out, unless they have been arrested and convicted is important. Simply an arrest doesn't do it. Remember, you're innocent until proven guilty. You could be arrested 40 times. If there's no convictions, you're not considered a criminal alien. But so in order to worry about being deported by immigration under the current administration's insanity, because that's the only way I can describe it, folks, if you're an illegal alien, but you have not been convicted of felonies, they're not going to arrest you, they're not going to deport you, but they may give you employment authorization. When the president on June 15th stood in the Rose Garden and talked about how he was going to basically enact the DREAM Act without the benefit of legislation, in essence, circumventing this concept of checks and balances and separation of powers, which goes to the heart of how a democracy, our democracy, operates. I mean, he basically shredded the Constitution that day. He did something else as well. What he did was to fire the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens across this planet. And they were off to the races, and the finish line, ladies and gentlemen, was the border of the United States or an international airport. Remember, international airports are a part of our border because it is through those airports that millions of aliens enter the United States every year, tens of millions, both non-immigrant and immigrants who are coming to stay permanently. So we have this disastrous situation where there are 10,000 schools, 850,000 students, and the General Accountability Office found that some of these schools didn't even exist. They were simply schools on paper, and they were able to get these I-20 forms and send them to so-called students who paid for those forms, entered the United States, and evaporated into wherever. They're here, and they've embedded themselves. Flight schools also came under some scrutiny. And the GAO, the General Accountability Office, the investigative arm of Congress, this isn't some tabloid, this isn't some Looney Tune fringe operation, an official investigative arm of the United States Congress said that 38% of flight schools did not have all the requisite paperwork on file and that ICE had lost track of stuff. They even, last year I believe it was, found a school, a flight school, being owned and operated by, tighten that seatbelt one more notch, illegal aliens. Could you please stop and think about this madness? Stop and think about the lunacy. Look at what goes on at airports. And I do a lot of flying. I was just in Houston. I'm expecting to do some more travel in the coming weeks. It's theater. We get x-rayed. God knows, we'll find out 5 years from now that half the people x-rayed will get cancer, God forbid, or something. But we're going to be secure because we have national security theater. All that's missing is popcorn and the usher to guide you to your seat. This is theater. This is not national security. It's not national security when you have millions, and I would argue tens of millions, of illegal aliens living in virtually every town and city in America, and not just from Mexico and not just from Latin America, but from the four corners of the planet, and there's no way of knowing who they are or why they're here. And it gets worse. Iran has stationed their Quds, their shock troops, in growing numbers in Venezuela. There are direct flights now that go from Tehran, Iran, to Caracas, Venezuela. Well, why on earth is Iran sending soldiers to Caracas? For vacation? Venezuela has arms factories that they're that they've built. Why is that? We also know that there are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Argentina and Paraguay. And those groups include members of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Hezbollah. You should know Hezbollah is a client terrorist outfit funded by Iran. And Iran has warned us that even if it's Israel that attacks them, they will attack America. Are they blowing smoke? No, they're not. Why aren't they? Because they have pre-positioned their soldiers in Latin America. So much for the Monroe Doctrine. Think back to how President John F. Kennedy dealt with the threat of nuclear-tipped missiles being deployed to Cuba, and think about what we're doing now as increasing numbers of Iranian shock troops from the Middle East are landing at least weekly, if not daily, in Venezuela, and we all know how much Hugo Chavez loves the United States. This is madness. This is an abrogation of responsibility or worse, but we'll leave the or worse for other people to draw conjecture about. You see, the situation that we are facing is a very dangerous one. Janet Napolitano keeps telling us that the borders have never been more secure, and yet a couple of weeks ago, I wrote an article, and it focused on the violence in Chicago. And what was the problem with Chicago? Well, according to Jack Riley, the head of the DEA in Chicago, there are towns, neighborhoods within the Chicago area that, in his judgment, resembled Mexican border towns because they were running gun battles in the street, pitched firefights by opposing members of the Mexican cartels fighting for control over the drug turf in Chicago. And innocent people were getting hit by the crossfire. And according to Riley, it was spreading from Chicago to Milwaukee and elsewhere. But don't worry, because good old Napolitano says, oh, there's no spillover violence. Back in 1988, when I was the first INS agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the DEA, I did a study as to who we were arresting at the task force, the DEA task force. And it startled me after I got done crunching the numbers with a handheld calculator. It was quite a sight, if you could imagine me buried in a mountain of paper, because back then there were no spreadsheets that could be emailed to you. And I sat there literally with a big yellow pad and a pencil and a calculator, and I started tabulating physical arrest records. And I came to the conclusion that 60% of the people being arrested in New York City by the DEA task force for drug trafficking and related crimes were foreign-born. Crazy stuff. A couple of weeks ago, a good friend of mine, Mark Hager, and two of his friends from North Carolina came to visit me here in New York because they're doing a documentary on what's going on with immigration. They were focused initially on the Mexican border, and I said, Mark, and Mark is a college professor, by the way, and a radio talk show host. I've been on his program, in fact. And I stayed at his home when I was in North Carolina not long ago. I said, Mark, you need to see what's going on in New York. So they came up and we did some filming. I can't wait for his documentary to come out. I took them down a street known as Roosevelt Avenue in a neighborhood in New York known as Jackson Heights. And what was astonishing to him and should be to everybody, including our alleged leaders in Washington, is that there were money wire services and check cashing locations. And do you know what their business hours are? It's easy. They never close. So picture the scene. We're driving down Roosevelt Avenue, and for I don't know how many blocks, I mean, this is like miles, travel agency, money wire service, travel agency, a place that promises immigration law services, and so it went, travel agency, freight forwarders, and it was just a repetition. Dozens and dozens and dozens of each and every one of those establishments. And then off on the side street, more of them. And gold buying services, which of course makes it easy to move money. But what was so incredible was at 12:30 at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, we're driving down the strip, and there's a line of people in virtually every one of these places doing business. Now, let me ask you. When was the last time you had an urge at 1 o'clock in the morning not to raid the refrigerator? I'm guilty of that myself all too often, and my waistline shows it. But how many of you get the urge at 1 o'clock in the morning to run to a check cashing service or a place that wires money? The logical conclusion, folks, is that the people that were doing business there were moving money to consummate a drug deal. And this is primarily Mexican drug turf these days. It used to be Colombian, but the Mexicans have taken that business over. And then you go up to Washington Heights, and there's other establishments that are likely involved with the Dominican drug trade. Now, I want to be very clear about something else. Not everybody from Mexico is a drug dealer or a criminal or even an illegal alien. That's one of the terrible things about this whole business, about the argument, well, if you're a Hispanic voter, you want the situation. There are so many Americans who are of Hispanic origin, Latino background. They might be third or fourth generation American. They may well have served honorably in our military. Maybe their family members made the ultimate sacrifice defending America. But the politicians and the exploiters of illegal immigration and the legal, so-called legal system, have turned this thing into a race thing. That if you want the immigration laws enforced, you don't like brown skin. If you want the immigration laws enforced, you don't like Mexicans. That's a big lie. As an immigration officer, I spent years, I mean years, where I did not arrest or investigate a single Spanish-speaking foreign national, also known as an alien. We arrested people from the Caribbean, from Asia, from Europe, from Africa, you name it. I've arrested people from Canada, Great Britain. It's not about race or religion or ethnicity. I'll come back to that again. But the open borders crowd have turned it into this disgusting argument. And so we do have a percentage of people from different countries who come here to ply their trades involving crime. But you should also know that because of geography, Mexico does send us more illegal aliens than any other country on the planet, and more narcotics flow through Mexico into the United States than from anywhere else. And the saddest thing is how many decent Mexicans are caught up in the madness. 50,000 citizens of Mexico were slaughtered since former Mexican President Felipe Calderon took office. Many of them are police officers and judges and members of the military who desperately wanted to do the right thing. They are sickened by what's going on. So, we have to be so clear and so careful about how we come to regard fellow human beings. There are many heroic Mexicans who have been doing their damnedest to push back against the drug trade and the corruption. And sometimes, all too often, they wind up being killed and their mutilated bodies hung from bridges with graffiti sprayed on their bodies. Now we see the gun battles in Chicago. We know that there's a huge presence of Mexican cartels in hundreds of American cities. I don't doubt that some of those fast and furious firearms will be making their way into American cities. Because what the cartels have learned is that they need to control the money and the drugs themselves so that no one interferes with their profit. They guard it jealously. And the easiest way to retain control is to send their soldiers, so to speak, into our country to run the operation. Because anybody who works for the cartel knows damn well that if they do anything that's dishonest with the cartel, see, America doesn't enforce its laws, but the cartel certainly does. You double-cross the cartel, not only are you going to die, but they will make certain that your wife, your children, your brother, and your parents will probably die also. So they send these thugs up to the United States to run the drug trade, and these guys are violent beyond words. One of the people that was talked about when the sheriff did his thing at that event this past week in Washington was how one paid assassin has killed at least 80 people. And he said it's not a big deal. In the beginning it was difficult, but after a while you get used to it. I mean, what are we talking about? This is the level of violence we're being subjected to. And now that the Middle East is erupting, we're being warned that the threat exists, that individuals who are incensed over this film may look to come to the United States and do damage to us. Could it be Al-Qaeda? Absolutely. Could it be a lone wolf who has been so fired up because he's angry? Absolutely. And I have a couple of quick thoughts about this business. I don't like any film that denigrates anybody's religion. It's an anti-American thing to do. However, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, had this apologetic attitude towards this whole thing. in my judgment, America has nothing to apologize for. This film had nothing to do with America or Americans. It had to do with one yo-yo who did the film and maybe one or two other people. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I don't care to see it. But whoever helped him with it. And it's despicable. But you know something? We hear lots of slanderous comments made about everyone's religion. I'm Jewish, believe me. Unfortunately, there is some anti-Semitism in the world. There's been enough anti-Christian rhetoric coming from different parts of the world. There are comedians who will poke fun at our religious beliefs. And it might be distasteful and it might be irritating. But part of the price we pay for democracy, and it's not really a price as far as I'm concerned, is to develop a thick skin and tolerance, especially for the people we disagree with. If they're talking about an Arab Spring where democracy is supposed to be the end result, then they need to understand that in a democracy, you have to have freedom of speech. And if you don't like what the other guy is saying, don't listen. And if it gets really bad, there's legal ramifications. But it's got to be through the legal system, not by blowing up buildings and killing people who had absolutely nothing to do with the film. And that message needs to be a very clear message, that if you're angry at something that happened, you don't have license to go out and kill people. That's not the way the civilized world works. That's not the way a democracy works. I've made the point before that the First Amendment talks about freedom of press and freedom of speech and freedom of religion. We all know that. We rattle it off. We were taught that day one in school. But what's probably not as well known by so many people are two other components of the First Amendment. The right to seek redress of grievances, and boy oh boy, if you don't have grievances, folks, check for a flatline EEG, and the right to peaceably assemble. And the reason the Founding Fathers included that in the First Amendment is because back then the only way to have discussion, discourse, debate, whatever, was live in a person, face-to-face, nose-to-nose, toe-to-toe. There was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no telephone, there was no radio. So the only way to have a conversation was to stand within the distance that a voice could carry and have that conversation. And all the Founding Fathers said was this: have at it, but basically leave your clubs, your knives, and your guns at home. Have at it, but be peaceful about it. Be peaceable. That's the idea. What's happening in the Middle East flies in the face of how the democratic process is supposed to work. And while I'm on the topic of how democracy is supposed to work, I want to give you something else to think about. This country is comprised of 300 million citizens, 300 million. We all do not see to eye on a broad spectrum of issues. And as you travel around the country, and this is really an eye-opener for me, living in New York City where you think you're in the center of the universe. As you travel out across America, and I've been everywhere from Hawaii to Seattle, California to Arizona, Texas to Indiana, Chicago to Washington, D.C., and others I've left out, Alabama and a whole bunch of other wonderful places. Each locale has different responsibilities, different needs, different customs, different concerns, different industries. It's not all the same. The United States is as big as a whole bunch of countries. So we're going to be different in the way we see things. The one thing we need to be with our fellow Americans, even if they are diametrically opposed on issues that we think are important, is we need to be respectful of each other. The only way that we're going to get true representative governance is if we focus on what unites us rather than what divides us. And I believe that the true measure of patriotism is not whether or not somebody is a conservative, and it's not if somebody is a liberal. It's if at the end of the day, we all want the same things for America, for our children, and for their children. A safe and secure country where the American dream is alive and well, where opportunities abound, where we can feel secure in our homes, and where our constitutional rights are being upheld by law enforcement. That should be the objective for everybody. Now, will there be differences? Yes, there will. There'll be differences about abortion and school prayer and gay rights. And as Americans, we need to understand that what the Founding Fathers had in mind was a country where people could be free to express their divergent viewpoints. And hopefully, eventually, we come to a consensus that makes sense for the greatest majority of American citizens possible. We are put at each other's throat by special interest groups that are playing the cynical game of divide and conquer. That has to stop. It's important that we speak to one another, not at one another. It's important that we turn down the rhetoric and the anger and the nasty words and the accusations and try to understand each other, because nobody is completely right and very few people are completely wrong. There's a middle ground. There's got to be room for compromise. Watching what's going on in the Middle East exemplifies what should not happen in anybody's country. And I know that there are decent people in those countries as well. In fact, it was interesting. Fox News was showing lots of people in Libya holding up signs saying that they were angered that our ambassador and those other State Department officials had been killed, that they were opposed to the violence. It's a mess. It's a mess. And that's why we all need to have respect for each other in this great country. We have to understand that people will see things differently based on their life experiences and their education and their orientation, and that's fine. Let's have those discussions, but let's do it peaceably. That's really what's so darn important. You know, I touched upon how the student visa program is thoroughly screwed up, but even that's not the only problem that we're facing. We're also facing the fact that fingerprints don't necessarily relate to people where we know who we're dealing with either. Really amazing. Here's another article that I did for CAPS, and this one they published September 1st on their website, and the name of it is Fingerprint Records Reveal That 825,000 Immigrants with Multiple Names and Inconsistent Birth Dates. And this is part of the U.S. visit program that the 9/11 Commission said was so important to help to stave off other terrorist attacks so we could keep track of aliens entering and leaving the United States. Turns out that there's confusion with 825,000 sets of fingerprints not necessarily relating to the right names. And this is the system that's supposed to make certain that aliens who pose a threat to our safety and security are kept out of the United States. You know, they say that a chain is as strong as its weakest link. It would seem that where immigration is concerned, what we have are weak links and all but non-existent links. This is extremely disturbing. This is something that nobody seems to talk about. It's something that I want you all to give thought to. How in the world can we protect ourselves when the very systems that we've spent tons of money on are dysfunctional and don't work? You know, what's astonishing to me, and you know, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission, is that the reason for convening the 9/11 Commission was to figure out what vulnerabilities contributed to those terrorist attacks. We've done that in the past. When Space Shuttle Challenger blew up, they convened a commission. What was the purpose? To figure out what went wrong. And they did. They found out that the O-rings on the solid booster rockets were leaking hot gases. The gases escaped, acted as a torch, and burned right through the fuel tank and blew it up. Okay, we figured that one out. We found out with Columbia that there was a problem with the foam insulation on the tank, and it had broken off and punctured the wing and let the hot gases in during the flamey reentry. So they made adjustments for that. Of course, now we've ended our own space program, which is insane. But that was the reason. When an airplane crashes, the NTSB sends a go team, as they are called, immediately to the crash site to gather evidence and information and retrieve the recorders and get eyewitness accounts, all for one purpose and one purpose. Try to make sure it doesn't happen again. Try to make certain that some other airplane doesn't plummet out of the sky and kill a bunch of innocent people. That was the reason, supposedly, for the 9/11 Commission. And incredibly, by the way, I have been told that there was some resistance to that commission in the first place. So we were attacked. the systems that are supposed to be in place to protect us failed. And you know something, folks? Many of those systems are still not working. In 2002, I was called to testify by Sheila Jackson Lee, believe it or not, about how two dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, could have been granted authorization to change immigration status so they could attend flight school. If you remember, Mohammed Atta was one of the ringleaders. Marwan al-Shehhi was working with him. 6 months to the day after the attacks, by then everybody on the planet just about knew that these guys were terrorists and knew that they were dead. Didn't stop the old INS. They granted these people the authorization to go to flight school. They were dead, but that didn't bother the Immigration Service, or at least the computer company that was hired to send out the letters of approval. I was asked to testify at that hearing. Again, that hearing can be seen online. You can go to my website or talkborder.com. You can go to capsweb.org. It's out there. Go to Google and punch in Michael Cutler, Congressional Hearing, Mohammed Atta. You'll find it. And the whole hearing is there for the world to see. We figured out what happened. It was a massive screw-up. And now we look at that article that I started talking about at the beginning of my program, how there are 10,000 schools that have provided opportunities for 850,000 students, and that 38% of flight schools are missing paperwork. They actually found a flight school that was owned and operated by illegal aliens. It took America 44 months to win the Second World War. I want you folks to think back to that. Approximately 3,000 military personnel, primarily sailors, naval aviators, I guess some Marines, died on that terrible day. We immediately went to war, immediately. It took 44 months. We weren't a superpower. But in just 44 months, the United States, working with some really questionable allies, think about Russia, think of what happened just a couple of years later with the Berlin blockade and East Germany and all that happy nonsense. But working with our allies, we built fleets of various forms of aircraft, bombers, fighter planes, and so forth, different ships, aircraft carriers, battleships, submarines. We worked nonstop, and we kicked ass. I mean, it was serious. We even built atomic weapons with brand-new, unproven technology. 44 months later, it was over. Our country was attacked almost 20 years ago, 1993, not once but twice within our borders by foreign nationals who were able to game the visa process and game the immigration benefits program. They entered the United States, and they attacked us. We didn't react. 9/11, 11 years ago. It's almost three times as long now since 9/11 as it took us to win the Second World War. Our borders only exist on maps. There are unknown millions or perhaps tens of millions of illegal aliens from every country on the planet, just about, living in towns and cities scattered across the United States, and we have no idea as to who they are or why they're here. But we're told we're waging a war on terror. We're told our borders have never been more secure, and there's no spillover violence. But the head of DEA, Jack Riley, who coincidentally, before he became the SAC, the special agent in charge of DEA in Chicago, was the special agent in charge of all places, DEA's El Paso office. And for those of you who aren't big on geography, El Paso sits directly across the border from Ciudad Juarez, the most violent city in all of Mexico because of the drug wars. So when that guy says that Chicago is resembling a border town in Mexico, I'll take him at his word. But we're told the border is secure. We're told the border is secure and the number of illegal aliens are down based on Border Patrol arrest statistics. The Border Patrol should be hiring the same accountants, or maybe they have, that cooked the books at Enron. I don't believe for one moment that arrests are down, because what's driving lots of Mexicans to the United States isn't the prospect of a job at this point, folks, although that's certainly a big part of it. They are running for their lives. There's a wonderful Italian store that I love to go shopping in, and there's a couple of very nice ladies who work there, and they were born in Mexico, and they immigrated to the United States, and they've seen me on TV, and they've seen what I do, and they agree with me. They're a big fan of the things I do, which really pleases me. And they said to me, you know, Mr. Cutler, you have no idea what's going on in Mexico right now. I said, okay, what don't I know that you know? Because their families are still back there. She said, you know those wonderful mariachi bands? I said, of course. I've been to Mexico City. I've been to Brownsville, Texas. And then I walked into Matamoros many years ago. I mean, you wouldn't want to do it today with the drug wars going on. I've been to Tijuana a number of times. I love the mariachi bands. They're fun. She said, well, nobody wants to see mariachi bands in Mexico anymore. And I said, why wouldn't they? It's a tradition of Mexico. She said, yes, but what the cartels are doing now to intimidate people is when a mariachi band shows up in a nightclub, as soon as they start playing music, they run into these nightclubs and they spray bullets everywhere and kill as many people as they can. If you lived in an environment like that, do you think you might want to get out of Dodge? So when the president says the numbers are down, and then he creates this juicy incentive to provide God knows how many millions of illegal aliens with employment authorization. And that system, by the way, is so screwed up, there will be no face-to-face interviews. There will be no way of doing investigations to determine if anyone's telling the truth. We know that fraud was a rampant issue for the amnesty of 1986. And back then, it was about 4 million aliens. We were told 1.1, 1.2, 1 point whatever. We wound up with nearly 4 million. And they couldn't cope with the fraud. They won't be able to cope with the fraud now. So if you don't think that the president has fired the starter's pistol, and in fact, the sheriff from Arizona who spoke with me at that caucus event, Stephen Henry, made the point that right after the president made the speech, they noticed a serious increase in the number of illegal aliens entering into Arizona where he is. So, you know, during the Johnson administration, when President Johnson would talk about how the war in Vietnam was going, we used the term, and those of you old enough to remember this will probably smile to yourself and think, boy, I haven't heard that in a long time. They talked about the credibility gap, which was a polite way of saying that the president was lying. The credibility gap. The credibility gap where immigration is concerned today, ladies and gentlemen, is as big as the Grand Canyon and growing bigger daily. The borders are not secure. Spillover violence is amping up. Lives are being lost. And now, DHS, the agency I have come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender, is warning that violence in the Middle East could make its way here. And if it does, the most likely route that it will take is through people from the Middle East gaining access to our country who probably shouldn't have been allowed to come into the United States or who probably ran our borders as a part of a concerted effort to do harm to us. Now, I hope this doesn't happen. I am not Chicken Little running around screaming the sky is falling. But only a fool would look at the current state of affairs and the current situation and the risks and threats that we face and ignore them. Perhaps if the State Department had taken into account that 9/11 was coming, that the terrorists of the Middle East are all about symbolism, perhaps these four deaths could have been averted. Perhaps. I don't know. I don't want to be the Monday morning quarterback. But where violence and terrorism is concerned, folks, nobody should be surprised. Forewarned is forearmed. We know that we're in trouble. I wonder what the government is willing to do. It would appear one thing they're not willing to do is to come to terms with the borders of the United States that today serve as little more than speed bumps to those who would come here and violate the laws for a variety of reasons, including participating in drug trafficking, and I fear terrorism. Doesn't mean that people from the Middle East are bad guys. You know, we've got to be careful about generalities. There are many people who come here from the four corners of the planet trying to escape the madness and the lunacy in their home countries. And perhaps the saddest irony is all too often it's those decent immigrants from the four corners of this planet who are the first victims of the violence created by the thugs who get to the United States from those very same countries. The kids that are being sucked into the MS-13 gangs tend to be the children of immigrants from Latin America. Same thing with the Russian mob and Asian organized crime and the Jamaican posses, the drug posses. This isn't conjecture. I did that job for 30 years. Next month will mark the 41st anniversary since I was sworn in as an immigration officer. I've had a long time to see this stuff up close. So I want you to be mindful of the fact that there are many decent people who legally immigrate to the United States. They simply want to live their lives the way we all do. And they have to be respected for it and encouraged to become a part of this great tapestry that we call America. But let's remember, as I like to point out, that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. I hope I've given you some food for thought this evening, folks. Look forward to joining you again next week on the program. And, you know, Election Day is coming. And there are members of Congress and members of the Senate whose seats are up for grabs. It's not enough that you vote, and certainly I want you all to vote. What you also must do is educate yourself. Get your information from as many sources as possible. I urge you to go to my website. You may agree or disagree with me, and that's fine, and you're certainly urged to send me an email at my website, michaelcutler.net. You can reach me through Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org. Or you can go to talkborder.com. I'm not the only one out there with information, and there may be those who disagree. And disagreement in America is as American as apple pie. All that I ask that you do is remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. I thank you so much for joining me. I wish you all a very wonderful weekend. For those of you of the Jewish faith, I wish you all a happy, healthy, safe New Year. And see you again next week, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.